Bluebells. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Mary Oliver. Get out of the bloody field! I'm on a bloody footpath, I yelled back, both because I was angry and because the man leaning out of his 4x4 window was far away on the road. It was an ineffective, hard-to-hear argument, so I just turned my back on the irate driver and continued following the path across a grassy field. I hate any form of confrontation. Even a cross tweet upsets me all day. But this one particularly annoyed me because I was on a public footpath. I would have understood the landowner's anger had there been no right of way and I was trampling crops, tearing up the land on a motorbike, dropping litter, or worrying livestock. But his assumption that he had more right than me to the earth, wind, sun, or sky irritated me. We all need to access the natural world for our enjoyment and health. And if enough of us develop a connection with nature, we might be able to reverse its destruction. But our history and laws have put so much of the countryside in the hands of so few people that we have allowed a culture to establish where going for a walk is seen as invasive or damaging. This get off my land ticking off put me in a blue mood when I should have been enjoying the clear blue skies and the bloom of bluebells. And it was a shame because I could see that a lot of trees had been planted here, something that always lifts my spirits. So the landowner and I probably had far more in common than the gulf of our shouting match suggested. Had we chatted congenially and disagreed agreeably, the two of us would more than likely have ended up cheering for trees but feeling frustrated at government feet dragging. For example, one tree-loving landowner told me they tried to plant 200 acres of woodland, aided by receiving a grant that didn't make the venture profitable or even balance the books, but at least made it manageable for them to do the right thing for the land. But they were then told to apply for planning permission to plant the wood. By the time it came through, policies had changed and the planting grant had been withdrawn, leaving them with tens of thousands of tree whips sitting in their greenhouses. It is so frustrating to hear stories like this. However, I rode out on this fresh spring morning to look for bluebells, not to get in a grump, and so into the woods I went. I was not disappointed. Bluebells are a highlight of my year. Their season is one of the most delightful times in England, with pockets of shaded woodland overflowing with carpets of flowers. Bluebells grow slowly and take a long time to establish, so woodland where they flower is usually ancient. Because they flower early in the year, bluebells provide important nectar to pollinating butterflies, bees, and hoverflies. I was taken aback by their abundance and vibrancy, such extravagant beauty in our generally muted landscape. Yet Britain has half of the world's bluebells. They're one of our natural crown jewels. A bluebell's many colloquial names include cuckoo's boots, grandfer griggles, witch's thimbles, lady's nightcap, fairy flower, and crate, crow's toes. Fables about bluebells abound. Bluebell woods were said to be enchanted by wicked fairies who lured and trapped people. Should you ever hear a bluebell ring, you would be visited by a menacing fairy and would soon be dead. Picking a bluebell is also hazardous, for fairies may then lead you astray, leaving you to wander lost for all time. Less sinister notions held that bluebells were symbols of humility, gratitude, and love. Turn one inside out without damaging it, and you would win the person you loved. Wear a wreath of bluebells, and you could only speak the truth. Bluebells had many practical uses in olden times. with their sticky sap used for gluing books and sticking the fletching feathers onto arrows. Elizabethans crushed the bulbs to get starch for the ruffs of their collars and sleeves. Every grid square in Britain has, over millennia, been changed and managed. Nothing is wild, nothing is untouched. But the plus side is that everywhere comes with layers of stories like these woven into it. Somebody has walked each square before me, people whose tales I would be intrigued to know. With so much history in the landscape, I perpetually risked opening one of those Russian dolls that go on forever. Or up to 51, actually, which is the world record for Matryoshka dolls. For in every grid square walk the ghosts of Romans and Victorians, the hidden histories of medieval farming practices and Neolithic burial beliefs lie in every field. Never mind the eons of evolution in every plant and the billions of years of geology beneath every footstep. And this is before I even get on to all the tangential ideas that each square brought to my mind, memories of other places, plans for future journeys, books I have read, random trivia. In other words, my single map was in danger of unfurling into a lifetime of work and wonder. Louis MacNeice put this feeling better than me in his poem Snow. World is crazier and more of it than we think, incorrigibly plural. I peel and portion a tangerine and spit the pips and feel the drunkenness of things being various. Leaving the bluebell wood, I stepped over a ditch full of delicate mauve cuckoo flowers, yellow cowslips, then followed a footpath across grassy fields in the sunshine. To my delight, I saw my first swallow back on my map after a gigantic migration from southern Africa. They had arrived. I cherished the swallow's chirping song and acrobatic flying that catch at my heart and trail it after them like streamers, as Annie Dillard wrote in Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, observing the birds around her home in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains. A swallow has even been spotted in Antarctica, making it the only one of the world's 6,000 species of songbird to have reached all 7 continents. Because they only eat flying insects, the food supply for swallows dwindles at the end of the summer. So, after a too brief visit, they head south once again, nonchalantly crossing the Sahara Desert at a rate of around 200 miles a day. I doff my cap at this, remembering my own laboured efforts in deserts, whether cycling in the Nubian or Taklamakan, running marathons in the Sahara, or heaving a cumbersome cart through the empty quarter in Arabia. Next year, the swallows will return to us again, with almost half the pairs returning to the very same nest. Seeing that one swallow today had made my spring. Bird migration baffled our ancestors, and even Gilbert White struggled to believe in it. Undertaking a 12,000-mile round trip in search of food sounds outlandish, so alternative theories prevailed for the swallow's mysterious appearance, then disappearance. Humans wrestled with the notion that small birds could accomplish navigational journeys that were beyond our heroic explorers. Perhaps the birds hibernated, people guessed, burrowed into the mud at the bottom of ponds, or even flew to the moon and back. It was peak lambing season now, and young lambs pranced in the pastures and butted their mothers for milk. The ewes eat grass, and the suckling lambs enjoy a mixed diet of grass and milk that helps them put on 300 grams a day. The popularity of eating sheep meat, mostly lamb, is declining in Britain, though it is still higher than in many other countries, perhaps being culturally ingrained by the historical importance of our wool trade. Wool exports drove the British economy from the 13th to the 15th century. Wool was known as the jewel in the realm. All Englishmen had to wear a wool cap to church on Sundays to support the wool industry. Even today, the Lord High Chancellor in the House of Lords sits on a woolsack as a reminder of the economic importance of the wool trade. It was the desire for wool that led to the notorious Highland clearances in the 18th and 19th centuries, which brought eviction and famine to much of rural Scotland. Populations were forcibly removed from the land to create more space for sheep. The clearances destroyed the clan society and led to rural depopulation and mass emigration. Dominating today's grid square beyond the fields of sheep was a transmitter station, a colossal metal spike thrusting high into the sky and dotted with dishes to transmit radio signals across the land. It was a sensible location, for I could see right across my map and far beyond. The green landscape fell away in every direction, dissolving into the hazy horizon. I always considered my map to be suburban, but from up here, it was evident how much countryside stretched across the region. I crossed a busy motorway via a footbridge, stared down at the hypnotic rushing traffic for a while, and then went into some woods to search for what I was pretty sure would be the highest trig point on my map. I like wild land squashed up against motorways, secret hideaways unnoticed by the thousands of people thundering by just metres away, faster than cheetahs, listening to Radio 2, Capital, Radio 4, Classic FM, and drumming on their steering wheels. The subtle shades of the woodland, its stillness and birdsong, all lulled me after the roar of metal, the rush of primary colours, and the tang of burning fuel. The wood was mostly oak and beech, with a carpet of dog mercury beneath. But there was also a stand of Scots pine trees with a bare floor of needles that reminded me of Castile, minus the chirrup of cicadas. I once spent a month hiking through Spain with no money and only my scant violin busking skills with which to earn my next loaf of bread. I often sought siesta shade beneath trees like these. It was one of the best times of my life. I found my trig point on the far edge of the wood, enveloped in brambles beside a flinty ploughed field. It took 3 attempts with my camera's 10-second timer to successfully capture my dash, climb, and celebratory pose, but I got there in the end, arms aloft and grinning on top of the trig point. The high point of the map, my Everest for the year, and a grid square of sunshine, swallows, and bluebells. Today was definitely worth smiling about, and no irate landowner begrudging me enjoying our ancient rites of way was going to spoil that.